Really good to be here in the University of Cambridge, and really good to be at this particular event, which really does promote research and the evidence-based approach to policing. And first, I want to commend all of you for being here at the conference. I know you're going to be joined by many other colleagues over the next few days, but it says a lot about your own personal commitment to development and research in policing that you're here at this wonderful place. I think I first, Frederick, need to defend football, English football, particularly coming from Manchester, which is, of course, the global city of football. I won't say whether it's red or blue. And having you telling them that I've got a degree in Spanish, then I ought to say to muy bienvenidos a colegas de Uruguay que han viajado gran distancia. So, and it's good also to be with Bernard. We've not shared at all what we're going to say, so I've got no idea whether what he's going to say is going to be in harmony with me, but actually Bernard and I were on the same special course at the Police College in Brands Hill in 1985, and we actually sang in a quartet. We sang the Mud Song, didn't we, Bernard? So we were in harmony there, so I've got no idea whether we'll still be in harmony after all these years. As Nick said, it's a little bit difficult with an international audience, because some of what I'm going to talk about is about the current state in Britain of this subject around research and education, because we are going through a period of great change and reform from our government. And one of the proposals is to replace Nick's organisation, the NPIA, with a new professional body for policing. And in fact, that body will be called the College of Policing. And the idea about it is really absolutely to promote evidence-based practice, to take on national functions of setting standards and training, but very much as well to encourage the profession of policing to take responsibility for this national coordination and this national setting of standards. It has been a difficult conversation with government. There's been a lot of practical issues to work through, and I'm not going to dwell on those. I want to look more at some of the history of research and education in policing and some of the factors really which have inhibited its development. But I really want to pick out two features of the current scene, the current environment that we're all working in. And that's obviously with the background of the financial crisis, the economic crisis, which is affecting nearly all countries in the world and is seeing in most countries budget reductions, funding cuts to policing. And I just wanted to pick out two features of that. The first is that given in most police forces, about 85% of the budget is spent on people, it makes it all the more important that you are getting the best out of your people. If you're going to have a smaller workforce, you really need research and evidence-based practice to think, what is the best I can do with those people? What are the tactics that will work? You need managers and leaders who can really make decisions about how do I prioritise? What are the different tactics open to me? How do I decide that? How do I evaluate what I'm trying to do, my different tactics? How do I make sense of difficult, complex situations? We need police officers who can rationalise for their actions. And I think crucially for us, it is about how do you get your staff to produce quality and handle risk and manage risk without needing complex bureaucracies and too much hierarchy in management to achieve that quality. And certainly overall, in British policing over the last 10 years, when we've had lots of money, when on the whole, when we've had a problem with quality or a new risk to try and manage, we've dealt with that by introducing more bureaucracy, more forms, more checking, and more checkers and bureaucrats to try and safeguard the quality of that process. Now, we can no longer rely on that. We don't have the money to do that. And therefore, we need staff, we need managers and leaders who, as I say, can work on the basis of evidence-based practice and research to manage risk and achieve that quality. And the second factor I just want to pick out of the current situation is certainly in most police forces in Britain, because you are reducing the spend on management, because you're reducing the size of your overall workforce, there are a lot fewer opportunities for promotion. And that is quite a change for a workforce that is used to lots of opportunities for promotion and development. And indeed, quite a few people have come through this particular course with the expectation, if I do this, then next year I'll get promoted. Those opportunities are not going to be there in that number in the future. And that is going to be a huge challenge for us. We've got lots of wonderful colleagues with lots of ideas who want to take on more responsibility, do more things, and we're going to be saying, no, you can't do that. And as I say, that is going to be a real challenge. And that means that we need other systems in which we can incentivise people for what they are doing. We need to find new ways about how we recognise expertise and new ways in which we can reward people. So, for instance, if you're a really good detective, I can't say you're going to be promoted to Sergeant Inspector Superintendent, but it may well be that I can say you will be allowed to develop as a detective and take on more responsibility, have a higher professional status, and yes, absolutely receive some money as well. But for most people, it is that status and it is that greater responsibility that they need. And again, that gives a different focus on the workforce in terms of how do we build up different forms of developing our staff, how do we raise their expertise, and again, that greater emphasis on understanding research. In our approach to the budget cuts, certainly what we've seen on the whole from our government and from the Home Office has been a big focus on things like outsourcing, procurement, and information as the way to get through this. Well, I find it interesting that on the whole, when I speak to people in the private sector who've been through this, people in really successful organisations, they mention two things. One is you upskill your workforce. You upskill your workforce because that is the only way that you get them to deal with a more complex world. And the second thing is that you push responsibility down. Now, without being overcritical, that is not the sort of language and the notions that I've heard on the whole from our civil servants and from our politicians. But it does put a big responsibility on the policing profession to develop another narrative. Overall research in policing, certainly in British policing, has not had a good history. There has been a big gap between criminology and policing in particular. It actually used to be better in the past, in my experience. Certainly probably 20 years ago, there was a lot more investment from the Home Office in research. There was a Home Office research desk so that if you know, whichever police force you were in, you wanted to know who else is doing some work on this, there was somebody you can ring up. As I say, the Home Office itself sponsored a lot more research. That has all fallen away. And overall, it is not a good situation. I found it interesting. We did some work in Greater Manchester. We were teamed up by the United States Department of Justice with San Francisco and Los Angeles Police, and we were invited to meet together, and we were allowed to bring some sort of senior police officer colleagues. And we could bring one other person who wasn't a police officer. The two American police forces brought their local professor from their university. We brought a consultant from Price Waterhouse who'd been helping us in our efficiency program. And I found that just quite interesting in terms of the different thinking in the two forces. Why is some of this difficult? Well, I think if we look right back to in British policing, certainly Sir Robert Peel had deliberately put an emphasis on not recruiting educated gentlemen into the first police force. It was very much about the first police officers really understanding life on the street and making that connection on the street. And it's true as well that I think for most of policing history, and policing's been a fairly simple task. You know, when I joined policing 30 years ago, on the whole, it was largely about patrol and arrest. And we ran the show. There weren't too many people coming into our police stations. There weren't too many people who could ask us questions. Of course, that is vastly different. Policing is far more complex, and we have a whole series of different bodies holding us to account. But overall, on the whole, the popular image has been of the thick copper. Certainly in British culture, there's almost an expectation that people prefer their coppers to be a bit thick. And on the whole, the British media, British politicians have not liked thinking police officers. They've preferred us to just get on and cut crime arrest people, do whatever we were commanded, and not to ask too many questions. And indeed, even at the moment, there's a bit of a tension between ACPO and the Home Office, with the Home Office saying the police's role is to cut crime. And yes, well, it is, but it's a little bit more complicated than that. And there's lots of other things that we do that are not directly related to crime in that very simple manner. It's fair to say as well that the whole pace of debate has quickened, isn't it? The world we live in is very, very quick. New initiatives come and go very, very quickly. And therefore, the emphasis has been really on action, quick action, and not just debate. And the fact as well is that we've been through, what, the last 10, 15 years with a particular focus on performance, on fairly simplistic statistical indicators, on more on a transactional form of leadership and management than transformation. And on the whole, leaders have been judged on their ability to reduce burglary and improve their burglary detection and meet the target, rather than perhaps on a more sophisticated thinking, research-based approach. A lot of it has been actually fairly short-term and simplistic. And also, really, just the whole focus on cost-cutting and efficiency, again, has made us short-term and more reluctant to actually invest in long-term research and long-term investment in training and education. And it's true as well that for our staff, there hasn't been a huge amount of incentive to do this. There hasn't been a huge amount of incentive, for instance, to get academic qualifications. If on the whole you're going to be judged on whether you met your burglary target, then there's probably not a lot of incentive to coming on courses like this. And certainly in British policing, certainly promotions and development standards have not been linked to any academic qualification. There's been some development around the exams for sergeants and inspectors, what we call Osprey. But on the whole, they're still basically a legislation exam. They're based on your ability to remember big pieces of legislation and be able to parrot them back, really. If you ask things like, well, for a superintendent, what's the standard you've got to try and achieve? You know, what's the standard in policing, in police knowledge, in command, in leadership, in management knowledge? We don't really know. We've got one or two things around commanding firearms incidents and public order, but we have no clear standard to do that. And in the worst cases, isn't it, it's on your ability really to almost bullshit your way through an interview. And that can't really be the way in the future. But on the other hand, you know, while this has been going on, we have developed lots of different standards and forms of accreditation. Trouble is, it's just not been well coordinated. But almost if you look in any area of policing, whether it's hostage negotiating, being a detective, firearms officers, handling big public events, there are now a huge series of different standards. There are manuals. There are standards of accreditation. In some of them, there is pass-fail, which is quite a novel feature, isn't there? So it's not that there aren't standards. It's just the fact that they've not been very well coordinated. And also, there has been no link to the workforce model. So although that part of various specialisms have become more sophisticated, on the other hand, things like the pay system is solely related to your rank and your length of service and pays no recognition to somebody's expertise. Now, of course, that is very different from the models which have developed in medicine and in teaching. And in teaching, for instance, you know, they've found a way by where if you're a very good classroom teacher, you'll be rewarded for developing your expertise, for perhaps taking on responsibility for the year group or for science across the school. And on the whole, you're not pushed just to go into a management position where you lose, where you no longer have contact in the classroom. And similarly, in things like nursing, they have a route whereby if you develop your expertise as a nurse, you'll be rewarded and get higher professional status without necessarily having to go into a management position. Now, we don't have that in policing. I'm not saying that the experiences in those other professions has been perfect, but on the other hand, they have recognised the increasing complexity required of frontline professionals and found a way of specifying that and building it into the pay and reward system. If you look at one area I think which is worth looking at in policing, the way that the detective world has developed. And is in policing, a lot of that came from, sadly, big cases which didn't go well, particularly came from the Yorkshire Ripper case, whereby the lack of expertise in investigation was at the fore. But from that, to be fair, the detective profession developed the professionalising investigation programme that actually started to set pass-fail standards. It was very much about people's record of achievement as a detective, and now in forces, it's not so much your rank as a senior detective, which is important, it is about what level, what is your accredited level within the PIP programme. And I think you can see that that has had a benefit for the public. Certainly most of my career, sadly, there was a constant litany of miscarriages of justice brought about often from unethical or very poor standards of investigation. Thankfully, on the whole, they are a thing of the past, and in most police forces, the standard of investigation in major crime is very, very high. So given that situation, which is, as I say, is mixed in terms of public and government support for research and evidence-based practice in policing, secondly, as I say, that fact that it's not built into the workforce model, on the other hand, we now have two opportunities. And the first of those are the reforms to pay and conditions proposed by Tom Windsor, and Tom is here in the audience tonight, and also the opportunities provided by this new College of Policing. Tom, in his report, has started this move towards expertise payments. It's going to be a long route. One of our difficulties in policing is we haven't been able to convince the Police Federation of the arguments for going down this particular line. On the whole, they want to stick to the present framework for payments. But Tom, as I say, has started the move to create a framework whereby we could start recognising levels of expertise and move away from just paying people on the basis of their length of service and their rank. But I particularly want to dwell on the College of Policing and what are the opportunities. One of the big opportunities is for policing to actually set the agenda. Certainly in British policing on the whole, while we can be fairly aggressive out there in the streets and we meet all sorts of proactive and meeting all sorts of dangers, on the other hand, we've often been fairly submissive in the face of various political initiatives and stories from the media. The College of Policing is a real opportunity to say, absolutely, we need to listen to the public. We need to listen to the priorities set for us by politicians, but it really should be the profession who's saying this is the best way to actually do this. And this does require a degree of professional self-confidence that I don't think we always have. Certainly quite a lot of my staff just seem to wait for what was the next government initiative, the next thing coming down the line, rather than having that professional self-confidence to say, no, we are professionals, you know, we spend a lot of time dealing with the public, we know the nature of our societies that we're policing, and we could actually, through the professional body, start setting a lot of that agenda and try to influence the debate with the public. Because it's fair to say, isn't it, when you compare us to the medical profession, I think overall, the public seem to trust the expertise and the professional knowledge of doctors perhaps a little bit more than, for instance, they've trusted police leaders up to now. The College of Policing will also give us an opportunity to try and move away from the culture we've got of this sort of shop floor and leadership. It's great fun going to the annual conference of the Police Federation. It's good being abused, as I'm abused, as ACPO doesn't have a clue, and we're all in it for the money and the glory and all these other things. But I think, to be honest, to politicians, to the public outside, it looks a fairly strange thing that we seem to be almost caught in a 1970s time warp of this gap between the leadership and the shop floor. The College of Policing would also give us opportunities to create communities of learning in all the different disciplines of policing. I've mentioned detectives, but you know, there are all sorts of different specialisms, including some of the specialisms which are not solely about police officers, but police staff as well. It would allow us to develop those specialisms. And as I say, that in itself would encourage more lateral development and more people who've got expertise to have a voice in policing. And crucially, the College of Policing would allow us to create stronger links with wonderful institutions like this and with other colleges, and crucially as well with police forces around the world. This isn't going to be easy. Some of the challenges we will face is, if anything, the political culture is likely to be more short term. For our international colleagues, we've got elections in November for new police and crime commissioners in every police force. That is likely to create probably a more short-term view because they'll only be elected for 4 years and possibly more fragmentation in British policing. So that is going to be a particular challenge, but on the other hand, the College of Policing could act as a bulwark against that. Overall, from the media and from the different bodies to hold us to account, we tend to have a culture of scapegoating rather than learning lessons. Often I find in coroner's courts, and as I say, some of the other bodies who hold us to account and investigate us, they seem to be more interested in, can I find an individual member of staff to hold to blame, rather than recognising that we work in complex systems where there are interrelationships, and it does seem in the medical profession there is a more of an emphasis in learning lessons rather than finding somebody to blame. And I think, you know, we all know there are challenges in terms of research. Research can take a long time, quite understandably, in gathering evidence. I mean, I'll see the impact of different tactics. And as I say, in a fast-changing world, we need to look at that. But I think that's probably more about the design of research than anything fundamentally wrong with it. In terms of then linking that to the workforce model, we really do need your help on how that would actually come about. Certainly in policing overall, when we've tried to bring in more assessment, we've brought in huge amounts of bureaucracy as well. It's fair to say also that in some of the other public services like nursing, when they've gone to this sort of model, it has increased costs. And of course, in nursing as well, they were so busy becoming professionals and experts. The contention is that they lost sight of the patient and forgot that the core part of nursing is actually compassion. And at the same time, we have to recognise that, you know, policing is about often doing difficult things. We do need police officers who are still prepared to do the basic things well. And without questioning, that's why you have police. But on the other hand, I think we know that even the most basic tasks in policing are becoming more complex. And even the way that you deal with situations on the street can be improved if that frontline professional has a better understanding of the complexity of what they're dealing with, the impact of their own personality and their own way of doing things on victims, even in the most basic of police functions. Evidence and a higher standard of learning on frontline staff will make it better for the public. And at the same time, we've got to recognise that, you know, whatever may be some of the weaknesses of our workforce model, it is simple. It is flexible, and we will need to hold on to that. But my argument is that we do need now a bulwark against what will be more political influence and more short-termism. We do need, as a policing profession, to set the agenda, and we need to maintain our national capability amongst the 43 forces at a time when there may be fragmentation, but doing that on the basis of research and learning. We need, as professionals, to be able to articulate what is really more a more complex and interconnected view of policing, and indeed the world of policing, because there are very few things in policing now that don't have a relationship with the other public services. And indeed, this particular financial crisis will need a fundamentally different way of delivering the public service. And therefore, I think the professional body will help us to join up with other colleges, with other professionals, to be able to articulate that view. As I've said, we need to develop and broaden the development opportunities for staff. We are not going to be able to meet all their expectations through promotion and hierarchical opportunities. We need to allow them to develop as professionals. We need to allow them to take on more responsibility. Again, most successful organisations are really, really good at recognising talent in their frontline staff, and allowing people to develop outside what might be an organisational framework. And we also owe it to our staff that they can only survive in a more complex world where there is greater accountability if they have that basis of evidence and doctrine which will allow them to explain and account for their actions. And as I've said earlier, it is the only antidote I know to bureaucracy and to more inspection and checking is by having a staff who actually understand not just what they have to do and how they have to do it, but also crucially the why. And it also deals with quite a number of other issues in policing around some of the issues of diversity. So much in diversity is we've often tried to think we can deal with the diversity issue by giving people greater cultural awareness, by almost training staff that you can use these words and not those words. It doesn't work. Most other professions have dealt with this by, again, raising the professional standard of their staff, enabling them to cope with all the complexities of the multiracial society that we police. How is this going to work in practice? Well, the ACPO business areas that we have at the moment are going to go into the College of Policing. The College will take on the responsibility for setting standards, accreditation and training, quite a lot of the work done by the MPIA as well. Hopefully it will form strong links with academia. It will be that the foundation for the move to greater professionalism in our pay and reward systems set by Tom Windsor. It will apply to police staff and volunteers as well, to draw us into a more cohesive profession overall. And it will also create a gap between police chiefs, between chief constables and the profession. I think that is important because at the end of the day, police chiefs will have to do the bidding of their police and crime commissioners and the Home Office, or the alternative is really that you resign, isn't it? On the other hand, the College of Policing and the professional body are able to articulate the long-term view outside of the political maelstrom in the way on the whole that, for instance, you know, the Royal Colleges of Medicine are able to do whatever the NHS as a body has to say in line with government policy. So we need you to believe in this. We need good people like you that are in this room that have shown your commitment to development by being at this conference. We need you to believe in it and see the opportunity. There is no plan for British policing unless we in the profession actually create it. A lot of people see conspiracies at the moment. I see a lot of cock-ups, but I see a situation where on the whole, politicians cannot solve this one. Unless the policing professionals step forward, it's not going to be terribly good for the public. And within this, it has to be our commitment to people and the development of our people is more important than just compliance with process. And hopefully we need the College of Policing with links to great institutions like this to be internationally recognised as a centre for democratically accountable policing. I think this is important because you know, policing is just so important to our society, isn't it? As we sit here today, I think it'll be about 40 families coming home in Greater Manchester to find their house burgled. So this is about, can we reduce that number? We know that policing, particularly in perhaps more difficult times that we're going into, is crucially important for the maintenance of human rights and democracy. We've only got to see around the world how important that is. And that is why this profession is so very, very important. But principally, I'm driven by my own staff. Whenever I go out and see police officers and police staff doing what they are doing, I'm just amazed by their professionalism, often by their patience, the complexity and the professionalism that they've had to develop. And I just feel that that should be recognised. It should be recognised in their professional status. It should be recognised in the way they're regarded by the public, the media, and by politicians. It should be recognised in the pay system. And really, this opportunity to build on evidence-based practice and develop the College of Policing will be a huge support to them in the future. Thank you, Larry. Once again, it's a great pleasure to be here. I can perhaps take one or two questions as Bernard's warming up. If anybody would like to ask me or challenge anything I've said. No, I obviously covered it extremely well, Larry. So.